Washington, D.C., home of Navy athletics.
This is a paid commercial program and may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host and managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. President John F. Kennedy, under whose administration the combined federal campaign received its combined mission, once said, "From those to whom much is given, much is required." It is the spirit of these words that continue to infuse the purpose of the CFC, the largest workplace giving campaign in the world, a powerful collective effort that gives back to the community. What is the mission of the combined federal campaign for the National Capital Area? What goes into managing the combined federal campaign for the National Capital Area? And how do federal agencies such as the U.S. Department of Transportation give back and engage communities? We will explore these questions and so much more with our very special guest, Linda Jacobs Washington, Senior Policy Advisor for Community Initiatives at the U.S. Department of Transportation and Chair of the Local Federal Coordinating Committee of the combined federal campaign for the National Capital Area. Linda, welcome to the show. It's great to have you back.
Well, thank you. It's wonderful to be here.
Linda, let's start off by understanding what is the combined federal campaign, and perhaps you can describe this initiative and give us an overview of its history and evolution.
Sure. The combined federal campaign, or as we affectionately call it, the CFC, is the only authorized workplace charitable giving drive for employees in the federal government. And it was actually launched by President John Fitzgerald Kennedy in 1961, the first year of his presidency. Now, what's interesting is that President Kennedy also started the Peace Corps that same year. A little bit of interesting history there. These two programs actually were designed to make a difference every day for people in the United States and the rest of the world. So next year, both organizations will be celebrating its 50th anniversary. And of course, we're very happy about celebrating the 50th year of the combined federal campaign. Now, since the campaign was established, over $6 billion has been raised in order to help those who otherwise, for whatever reason, cannot help themselves. Now, I know that you, Mike, are familiar with President Kennedy's famous quote, "Ask not what your country can do for you, but ask what you can do for your country." However, a lot of people are not aware that when he signed the executive order to begin the CFC, he said, "To whom much is given, much is required." This really embodies what the charge to federal employees is all about. And you know, the CFC is the largest charitable workplace giving program in the world. And in 2009, nationwide, we raised over $282 million. The Office of Personnel Management has organized federal employees into 211 independent CFC campaigns. And our campaign in the National Capital Area is a local campaign that covers federal employees and works with federal employees in the Washington metropolitan area. And we are the largest CFC. So we work with executive, legislative, and judicial branches. And everybody participates or is eligible to participate in the campaign here. So each year in the fall, as you and I are speaking now, we federal employees are given the opportunity to make a pledge to one or more charities of our choice. And by the way, there are 350,000 of us feds in the National Capital Area. And we'll be working with the program and this campaign through January 17th. So that gives you a little overview and who we are and what we do.
I'd like to transition. I understand this is your third year chairing the local coordinating committee of the CFC for the National Capital Area. Would you elaborate on your role, that role and responsibility in that capacity? And how do you balance it with your senior policy advisor role at the U.S. Department of Transportation?
Well, you know, I'm like the college president. I'm out there promoting the campaign. I'm the face of the organization to the federal agencies and to those who help us get visibility like you here, Mike. So we really appreciate this. This really does not in any way compete with my job at the Department of Transportation because it's all about community service. We have programs and projects specific to DOT, and the CFC relates to the entire government workforce. So the scope is bigger and the scale is bigger. But they actually complement and do not compete with each other. And I have to tell you, it's a joy. I end all of my emails with a quote from Brian Tracy, which says, "Happiness comes when you believe what you are doing, know what you are doing, and love what you are doing." I really do feel that this is my calling.
So how is the CFC for the National Capital Area organized? You alluded to the 11 initiatives from the CFC, the government-wide initiative, but who manages the daily operations of such an amazing infrastructure, and how does it work?
Well, let me say that a lot of people, and mostly volunteers, are needed to help with the campaign because it takes a big effort to raise and distribute the amount of money we raise. We as feds own this campaign. Federal employees created it, and over 35,000 of us run the campaign. You know, we've really developed a pretty well-oiled machine throughout the years, and the entire process has been honed from vetting the charities to recruiting and training volunteers, developing all the materials, and in the end, collecting and processing the donations. Now, to operate the campaign, everyone within the National Capital Area shares this responsibility, including, as I said, the volunteers. We have loaned executives, the local federal coordinating committee, which I chair, and we manage and direct the campaign. And we have CFC staff at the Office of Personnel Management. Now, a lot of credit also needs to go to the full-time campaign management organization who works with the feds to organize and manage the campaign all year long, because it's not just happening in the fall. It's happening all year long. So let me use a transportation analogy. Imagine a locomotive, and there's this guy. You've seen him in the overalls and the hat with a big oil can greasing the wheels. Now, the infrastructure is there, but the guy with the oil can keeps it moving. That's who we are. We're the guy in the overalls.
That's wonderful. So what are key workers and loaned executives? You mentioned that. And how critical are both of these elements to the success of your efforts?
Very, very critical. And the key workers, I know this is going to sound crazy, but they really are the key to the campaign. They're the ones in the trenches who are making the ask at their agencies. They're asking people to donate. Our experience has shown that people give when they're asked by people they know. And this is really borne true. While we have new key workers every year, you know, a lot of the key workers have been volunteering their time for the campaign for many years. And once they become key workers, many move up to the role of agency campaign managers. One campaign manager shared the following with me just a few days ago. He said, "I love the job of campaign manager at my agency. While I'm going on vacation after work tomorrow, I hope to hit the ground running when I return to work January 3rd. I shall continue to collect contributions until the window closes at CFC headquarters. I get fabulous support from my superiors. I've already recruited my team for the 2011 CFC. Now, that's commitment. And this is not unique, Mike. There are many federal employees throughout the National Capital Area who are truly committed to public service, not only in fulfilling the mission of their particular agencies day in and day out, but also in their commitment to giving back via the combined federal campaign. You mentioned the loaned executives. That's another group of passionate, committed individuals who have volunteered to leave their home agency during the campaign and work full-time to support other agencies' campaigns. And the agencies have donated these loaned executives for 6 months to work exclusively on the campaign. So you're thinking, gee, what is the motivation? Well, the motivation of the volunteers, the inspiration for what they do and why they do it is very, very personal. If you go to our website at cfcnca.org, you will find many inspirational stories from federal employees who have received the services of charities supported by the CFC. So they're working the campaign, but they've received services from the charities. And, you know, one that comes to mind is a federal employee who has been hearing impaired since she was 7. She attended a CFC charity fair at her agency that changed her life. At the fair, she met an organization that provides dogs to people who are physically challenged, deaf, or hard of hearing. She would have never known that this resource was available if she hadn't attended that event. She immediately applied for assistance and was able to receive her hearing dog. She said, "I feel so much more independent. I even travel by myself now." This is just but one example of a real-life connection between a charity and a federal employee. That employee is now a huge supporter of the combined federal campaign, a wonderful advocate. The ability to help our own federal family and friends validates the work that we're doing. So it's wonderful.
Yeah, and that anecdote really sort of illustrates the theme, the 2010 theme of compassion of individuals and the power of community. that sort of underlies your efforts. Would you tell us more about this year's theme, what its significance is, and how did you come up with this rallying cry?
Well, I have to tell you, the Combined Federal Campaign is the passion, and I do mean passion, of a great multitude of government workers. And it makes me proud to work with such fine men and women who are true servants to America and who really, really care about helping others. But you know what, Mike? That's the kind of people we are. That's the kind of country we live in. It's who we are. It's really in our blood. Think about it. Whenever there's a need here in this local area, anywhere in the country or in the world, we as Americans step forward to help. And federal employees are among the first to answer the call. And you know, as I visit every agency, I feel very fortunate to be able to come face to face with my federal employees and representatives from charities. And as I look into their eyes and I talk to them, I am always impressed by their commitment and their caring for others. That really is what the compassion of individuals and the power of community is all about. I am very honored as a federal employee to lead the CFC in the National Capital Area. And I am, again, one of 350,000 federal employees in the National Capital Area. Together, think about this. We deliver help and hope to millions of people in our own neighborhoods here in D.C. and Maryland and Virginia and across the country and around the world. I have to tell you, I've cried a lot during this campaign. I cry when I hear the heart-wrenching stories of people who are in need, but I also cry when I hear the heartwarming stories about how federal employees and charities are helping to meet those needs. That's what this theme is all about, the compassion of individuals, the power of community. It's the combined efforts of federal employees and charities who together create an incredibly powerful community of caring that provides life-saving and life-enriching programs and services to people and communities in need.
So can we talk about the breakdown of dollars that's collected? So how much goes to a national or a local or international charities and funds? And how about the undesignated funds? Where do these monies, the things that you raise, where does it go and how is it broken down?
Glad you asked that question. A lot of people ask that question. In 2009, federal employees pledged over $66.5 million. And I always say to federal employees, that is nothing to sneeze at. That's $66.5 million. Now, of that amount, $26 million went to local charities. National charities received about $32.1 million. International charities, about $6 million. And then undesignated funds were at $2.4 million. Now, undesignated donations, they're primarily raised through agency fundraising events. And they're distributed among equitably to the charities. So we had a great year, and we're going to have an even greater year this year.
It is important to keep administrative costs low while ensuring that charities receive as much as they possibly can. What are you doing, and what are your administrative costs within the CFC and CEA?
Well, you know, of course, it's important to keep administrative costs low. Our administrative costs are 7.5%, which means that 92.5 cents of every dollar raised through the Combined Federal Campaign goes directly to the charity. Now, we're always looking for ways to make the campaign more efficient and cost-effective. That makes good business sense, and we're good stewards of the funds. We've been able to take advantage of emerging technologies such as email, web, social networks, among others, and we've been transitioning to more electronic means of disseminating and collecting information. All about the campaign and about to charities and particularly to potential donors. It's now possible, quite frankly, to find the charity or charities you may be interested in supporting and make your donation online and paperless. Also, anyone, including you, can use our online catalog to find charities that may be able to help you. The bottom line is that we have been able to raise more money for charities while lowering our costs. So charities have continued to receive more funding year over year through the CFC in the National Capital Area.
So let's shift focus a little bit on the charities. How many approved charities are there, and how do you become selected and enrolled as a charity? What's the process?
There are over 4,000 charities of all types and sizes and shapes in the National Capital Area. We have charities that are well-known and little-known charities. There are charities that support science, the arts, education, charities that are providing basic human needs such as shelter, clothing, and food, charities which support research to find cures for debilitating diseases and illnesses, and international charities, charities that support animals, their local charities, national charities. These charities have been carefully vetted by OPM and our local federal coordinating committee. OPM establishes requirements that all charities must meet in order to be included in our catalog of caring. Some of the requirements are that a charity must be a 501c3 organization. They must be a human health and welfare organization. They must provide a copy of their audited financial statement and must have an active governing board.
What goes into managing the combined federal campaign for the National Capital Area? We will ask Linda Jacobs-Washington, chair of the local federal coordinating committee, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour. As society has become increasingly dependent on information technology in government, business, and in our personal lives, safeguarding private information created or shared on computers or the internet has taken on greater significance. How do you keep information secure in an increasingly interconnected and networked world? What is cybersecurity? Pick up the latest Center report, Cybersecurity Management in States, and find out. You can order or download a free copy at businessofgovernment.org. What is risk management? How do you manage risk more effectively? How can risk management lead to better decision-making? And what about applying risk management in government? Pick up the Center's report, Managing Risk in Government, An Introduction to Enterprise Risk Management, and find out. This report is especially timely given the Obama administration's focus on accountability and transparency, which has prompted a renewed focus on proper risk management and controls. You can order or download a free copy at businessofgovernment.org. Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Linda Jacobs-Washington, Senior Policy Advisor for Community Initiatives at the U.S. Department of Transportation and Chair of the Local Federal Coordinating Committee of the Combined Federal Campaign for the National Capital Area. Linda, you had alluded to, but I'd like you to explore more last year's results. How have the fundraising goals changed from last year and why?
Well, last year we did great. In the National Capital Area, as I said before, we raised a record $66.5 million. And Mike, that was almost $4 million above the amount we raised in 2008. That is phenomenal. Now, this year, we have set a new goal of $67 million because, quite frankly, the needs are greater than ever. And we're going to meet that goal and exceed that goal as well.
And you had alluded to earlier in the last segment the fact that the combined mission is almost 50 years old now, right? And
yes.
Next year will be its 50th. What are the benefits of participating for federal agencies in such a centralized giving effort?
Sure. You know, the centralized giving approach benefits both federal agencies and charities. Now, for federal agencies, it provides us a focused, organized, efficient way to give to charities without being solicited, quite frankly, throughout the year. Another positive result is that the combined federal campaign brings agencies with diverse missions together towards a common goal, and it really builds teamwork and camaraderie among the federal employees. We feds are working together for a common mission. Charities love the combined federal campaign, and many, Mike, would not exist and could not survive without us. What it means to them is that more money goes to their charities because we, the feds, are providing the marketing, visibility, and exposure for their programs. That reduces their overhead and operating costs. Now, imagine the resources it would take for a small charity to send a simple mailer to 350,000 people and process the responses. We do that for them. Thousands of charities in Washington, throughout America, and around the world depend upon the generosity of employees of the federal government for their very existence. These charities provide services to every part of our community and touch every one of our lives. Funding through the combined federal campaign is one of the most important sources of revenue for these charities, as I said before. Since the donations provide a steady income stream throughout the year that keeps their programs operating. So they really like that steady stream of income because they can count on it.
That's great. And I was wondering, what do federal agencies do to support your efforts? And what are some of the innovative ways federal agencies have, you know, gotten the message out and are increasing contributions?
Volunteers. Volunteers increase awareness about the campaign by engaging leadership so that leadership can actively support the campaign. They speak personally to their coworkers and they plan creative campaign events. I will tell you that agency leadership and visibility are some of the keys to the success of this campaign. Many agencies have highlighted the CFC on their websites, and agency secretaries, and specifically mine at DOT, and administrators have sent blogs, emails, and broadcast messages to their staff. More than 130 federal agencies sponsored a wide range of creative events, from cruise-themed fundraisers at HUD to talent shows. For example, the Department of Interior is building off a talent show theme called DOI's Got Talent. These are fun ways to engage people in the campaign while at the same time showcasing the many talents of federal employees and highlighting the charities. So it's a win-win all the way around. I love the Farm Credit Administration's a recast of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. They did it for their kickoff for this year's theme. Their same theme song is It's a Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. And it's a beautiful day in the FCA, a beautiful day for a favor. Would you donate? Could you donate? Won't you be a donor? Now, I know I can't sing, so I'm not doing it justice, but it was fabulous. And I got to play Oprah during an interview session with my husband, who I'm sorry to say is a former Dallas Cowboy. I know we're in Redskin territory, but we also did it with Lonnie Sanders, a former Redskin. And they both talked about the importance of giving. Also, my husband and I have attended many tailgate parties at agencies. Believe it or not, there are quite a few Cowboy fans in the area. CFC walks and runs have really caught on this year as a way to raise funds. So in addition to Fed's giving, we are getting in shape while doing so. So we're having fun and getting in shape and raising a lot of money.
So I wanted to go back because you did touch on the charities. If I'm a federal employee, how do I know those charities that are participating are actually legitimate?
Well, you can be very confident that they are because the Office of Personnel Management publishes requirements that all charities must meet to be included in the CFC. For example, charities must submit a copy of their audited financial statement in IRS Form 990. OPM reviews and approves all national and international charities, and our local federal coordinating committee, or the LFCC, reviews and approves all local charities. This is a detailed review process. The goal is that we want to know who you are, what you're doing, and that you are doing what you say you're doing. That's the bottom line.
That's wonderful. I wanted to go back because you had mentioned your efforts with your husband. Who was a former Dallas Cowboy. I'm from New York City, so I'm a giant fan. But anyway, I remember our conversation in 2008. You mentioned that, so that's very good. But I wanted to touch on the First and Goal initiative, where you loaned executive teams compete to raise money. Could you tell us more about that?
Sure. Well, you know, Washington's a football town. I'm a football junkie. I think you are too, Mike. So the idea of a First and Goal initiative came easy to me. This is my favorite time of the year. Besides CFC, I get to watch a lot of football. Well, in the National Capital Area for CFC, we have five teams of loaned executives who are account managers for each of the 130 agencies. The teams competed for valuable autographed footballs that were donated by the NFL Players Association. The top team representing the agencies with the largest donations by December 1st were awarded the footballs. The winning agencies are using these footballs to raise additional funds. The Department of Energy won a ball autographed by D'Angelo Hall, Washington Redskin two-time Pro Bowl defensive cornerback. The Department of Interior received the ball autographed by former Washington Redskins Brian Mitchell. And HHS got the ball autographed by Matt Stover, two-time Pro Bowl place kicker for the Baltimore Ravens. I have to tell you, this activity brought a lot of competitive spirit to the loaned executives and the agencies, and we all managed to have some wonderful fun.
Wonderful idea. I want to talk about more ideas. What the 10 action agencies can take to make their effort in the CFC and NCA successful and effective?
Well, first and foremost, we must engage agency leadership to actively and visibly support this year's campaign because leaders motivate and inspire. Next, we have to continue what we're doing with the activities and the events. It's fun, but it also engages people and it raises money. We need to use personal stories to make giving relevant. There are many, many inspirational stories around our offices. When we're working with people day in and day out, they share wonderful stories with us. So you should use those to inspire other folks. We need to stress the ease of choosing a charity and making a donation. And encourage donations through payroll deduction, because donating this way allows us as charities to budget our giving over the year, and charities to have a greater impact with year-round fundraising. We need to encourage coworkers to use the online resources for searching for charities and making donations. It's available 24/7 from just about anywhere, and it saves a tree. Agency volunteers, from campaign managers to key workers, can use the ideas of others rather than reinventing the wheel. So steal ideas from folks. It's the one time you can steal. And keep the campaign visible with posters, graphics, and video messages. And take advantage of support from your loaned executives. The most important thing is always remember to say thank you to every donor and every volunteer. And the emphasis is on every.
That's wonderful. And I wanted to talk about the idea of e-giving and the push around e-giving. How does that facilitate and encourage pledging? And what are some of the reasons you would donate using e-giving?
You know, there's so many good reasons for e-giving. First, it's what our donors want based upon feedback they gave us from prior campaigns and focus groups. It's fast, it's simple, it's secure, it's user-friendly, and it's confidential. It's a wonderful process. It helps us go green by limiting printed documents, and it reduces our overall campaign processing costs. And again, it's available 24/7 from almost anywhere.
How is the combined federal campaign for the National Capital Area focusing on success? We will ask Linda Jacobs Washington, chair of the local federal coordinating committee, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour. This is The Center This Week, highlighting the latest trends and best practices for improving government effectiveness. Brought to you by the IBM Center for the Business of Government. I'm Michael Keegan, managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. The Center This Week is our opportunity to inform and, most importantly, to invite you, our listeners, to use the IBM Center for the Business of Government as your resource, a how-to resource for improving government effectiveness at the state, local, and federal level. Over the last decade, we had the pleasure to interview government leaders who have offered their extended reflections on the importance of serving the public. In this edition of The Center This Week, we offer you a sampling of their insights. As scientist, teacher, and former Undersecretary for Science at the Department of Energy, Dr. Raymond Auerbach brings this point home.
If you think about art and you think about a painting, you're taught that your eye automatically gravitates to the upper right-hand corner. And so the artist then puts together his painting, his tableau, in such a way that your eye is drawn to that corner. If it's not, you're troubled, and the artist can trouble you by coming up with a painting that makes you feel uneasy. Scientists do the same thing. Scientific discovery is not some set of equations that we know and we write down and we solve and eureka. Scientific discovery is coming up with something completely new. Quite often when we discover things, they're so complex and so cumbersome that we wonder whether they really are true or not. And scientists have a tendency to think that they have finally gotten the answer when it's beautiful, when it's simple, when suddenly they see that all of that complexity can be bottled up in a relatively simple expression or simple structure. It's that aesthetic feeling of simplicity that drives discovery and makes one feel that you have created something. I often say to young people, how many fields in the world can you work in that you have a discovery that is yours, that no one can take away from you? You're the one that figured it out, and everybody else that comes along after knows that. That is so exciting. It's also terribly difficult. More often than not, it's very frustrating where you keep going down wrong paths. And you know they're wrong because in order to explain it, it's too complex. There's something wrong out there. So it's that aesthetic sense of simplicity that I think is behind scientific discovery and which keeps us going, just as exactly as an artist does when they describe their tableau. I view public service as a payback. My own career has been very generously supported by people through their taxes and by our federal government. I view the opportunity of coming to Washington and doing the best job I can as a way of expressing my thanks to this country for the wonderful opportunities it has given me. I would advise young people to get into discovery. It doesn't matter if it's the physical sciences, the mathematics, biological sciences, the science of discovery. It is so exciting, and it has with it a rigor and a process that they will find invaluable in other fields. I would then ask them, over time, to think about payback, about giving this marvelous country of ours a return on its investment in us. That's the way I view federal service, state service, teaching, local service. Each of us expresses our thanks for the support our country has given us through these vehicles.
For the IBM Center for the Business of Government, I'm Michael Keegan, and this has been The Center This Week. How can government cut costs and improve performance? How are disruptive innovations saving lives on the battlefield and expanding our presence in space? What is the U.S. Navy doing to strengthen its information dominance for the 21st century? What are federal agencies doing to be more transparent, participatory, and innovative? And how are federal agencies leveraging technology to improve mission effectiveness? Pick up the latest edition of the Business of Government magazine and find out. The Fall-Winter 2010 edition of the Business of Government magazine provides insights from those who lead. Hear from Richard Spires, leading Homeland Security's technology effort, Dr. Bobby Braun, advancing NASA's space technology program, Vice Admiral Jack Dorsett, strengthening the U.S. Navy's information dominance, and Sam Palcrano, coordinating U.S. Postal Service sustainability efforts. All of this and so much more in the Fall-Winter 2010 edition of the Business of Government magazine. Download or order a free copy at businessofgovernment.org and find out how the business of government is not business as usual. Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Linda Jacobs-Washington, Senior Policy Advisor for Community Initiatives at the U.S. Department of Transportation and Chair of the Local Federal Coordinating Committee of the Combined Federal Campaign for the National Capital Area. Linda, how have you built on last year's record-setting campaign success and leveraged research to improve campaign marketing, messaging, and outreach?
We launched a wonderful theme we talked about earlier, the compassion of individuals, the power of community. This gave us the opportunity in the National Capital Area to redesign our marketing materials with creative graphics and a lot of color, and the ability for the individual agencies to customize the marketing materials to meet their needs. We focused really on making it bright and personal. And here's how we developed this approach. We reviewed all the data, and then we talked to our fellow co-workers, rocket science stuff, huh? We talked to volunteers, we talked to loaned executives to really find out what worked and what didn't work. They liked the vibrant colors and energized look of the campaign. And the materials appealed to younger donors who called them fresh and new and felt they represented the cultural diversity of our federal workforce. We now feature inspirational stories and photos of our co-workers who have benefited and donated to the campaign. And with that, we achieved $66.5 million in 2009, so it worked. So this personal and emotional connection is an important piece in our ability to continue to raise record amounts for charities.
So this is your third year leading the way, if you will. What are the lessons have you learned from previous years that have been implemented to enhance your overall effort and make it a success this year?
Well, we have significantly increased the use of technology to both make it easier for federal employees to search for charities and make their donations, and that maximizes the amount going to the individual charities. We have learned over the years that a key factor in our coworkers deciding to donate is the personal touch. We give when we are asked by someone we know and trust. We have made many of the marketing materials, as I said before, customizable so that each agency can personalize the pieces with their own pictures, stories, and messages. And finally, I cannot stress enough the success of an individual agency's efforts is directly related to the active participation of that agency's leadership. So I personally have made a concerted effort to remind the agency heads that we need their personal, active, and visible participation. This is critical to our ongoing efforts as feds to help those in need.
So core value for the IBM Center for the Business of Government is management. We're always looking for the best management, best practices. And I wanted to get a sense of how have you shared campaign best practices and worked to generate ideas for volunteers to take back to their agencies?
Well, you know, we've done it in so many ways. For example, before the campaign starts, loaned executives were chosen and assigned by their agencies to work full-time, as I said before, in the campaign. The loaned executives received training and were then assigned as account managers to the 130 federal agencies. Then they train individual agency campaign managers, key workers, and other volunteers. So that's what we did before the campaign. Then we started the campaign with a leadership conference where 600 campaign managers and other volunteers came together to receive additional training, share best practices, and build teamwork. Midway through the campaign, we reconvened this group. We gave them a status, they told us their experiences, and then we created a strategy for the remainder of the campaign. At that meeting, we also gave them new additional marketing materials. E-newsletters geared to specific volunteer groups have been introduced this year throughout the campaign. These newsletters give additional tips and best practices. And at the conclusion of this campaign, we will again gather to thank our federal volunteers to celebrate our success in once again raising millions of dollars for charity.
When you joined us back in 2008, basically you were the Chico, or the U.S. Department of Transportation, with your CFC hat on. I want to understand how are you engaging the younger generation and new employees, and how has the expanded use of social media assisted you in this effort?
Well, you know, even though my husband Mark has gray hair, and we just celebrated our 40th wedding anniversary, we've tried to in the CFC appeal to younger donors, and so an online community actually was inspired and created through GovLoop, which is the federal employees' version of Facebook, and it's also been inspired by Facebook and Twitter, where volunteers and donors can read about the latest news, events, and stories on CFC. Using these technologies is an ever-evolving process, which can only grow, quite frankly, and just reach an impact to younger donors. In addition to giving us online visibility, both GovLoop and the Washington City Paper through a Lend a Hand Happy Hour, which targeted primarily their audience of younger donors. Now, more than 200 of us, and notice I'm including myself and Mark, attended the event and had a great time mingling with co-workers, charities, and CFC volunteers. All marketing efforts for the event were through social media channels. So we're engaging young folks and reaching out to them, and they've given us some incredible feedback as well, and they're on board.
Well, would you share with us some of the points of pride and inspirational stories that demonstrate the powerful impact of donations to more than 4,000 charities who need your help?
You know, we have three videos that feature federal employees whose lives have been touched personally by the CFC-supported charities. For example, Stan Stewart grew up homeless and was helped by a local charity funded through the CFC. And now Stan volunteers his time to work with at-risk kids in his community. Angela Kuhn was born with a crippling physical disability and received orthotics and prosthetics through a CFC-supported charity, which gave her greater self-confidence and independence. Then we have Jose Zavala, who was severely wounded while serving in the military in Afghanistan. When he returned to the United States to undergo treatment and rehabilitation, a CFC-supported charity provided safe, accessible housing for him and his young family. You know, feds tend to retire at this time of the year, and we have a number of them who request that employees give to the CFC rather than presenting them with plaques or other gifts. We also have, for the past 2 years, received over $100,000 each year from a former federal employee's estate. I tell you, I just hear inspiring stories all the time, and I meet inspiring people all the time, particularly feds and charities. At the FDIC, I met a federal employee who was wearing 20 eagle pins on her jacket. Each of those 20 eagle pins represents her donation of 1% of her salary to the combined federal campaign for the past 20 years. This is just one example of the continuing support our federal co-workers give to charity. You know, when a fireman asked a volunteer charity worker what's next for a family whose house had just burned down, the charity volunteer calmly responded, "We're next. We are going to provide for them. They don't need to worry. And I will tell you that I am proud that because of the selfless donations of my federal co-workers, this charity is able to say, 'We're next.'" The combined federal campaign provides funding to meet the needs of people who never, ever expect to ask, "What's next?" So I'm proud.
And speaking of that, OPM each year recognizes campaigns and volunteers who have made extraordinary contributions, just like the ones you've illustrated, to the CFC through either dedication or creativity. Would you tell us more about the CFC Innovator Award that was bestowed on the National Capital Area?
Happy to, because we are very proud that we have won the OPM Innovator Award for the last 7 years. The award is given to campaigns across the country that demonstrate the most innovative strategies. And I know we're innovative in the National Capital Area. Last year, we won the award for both our strategy and implementation of our integrated online tools, which enabled us to reach additional donors and raise more money. This included encouraging federal employees to go to our website to easily search the charity catalog and make a donation. It involved increasing the number of ways donors can donate online via credit card and other means, and moving and expanding campaign marketing tools online and providing the capabilities for volunteers to download and customize marketing materials. This award also recognized that these efforts played a significant role in our raising over $66.5 million in the National Capital Area.
How do federal agencies such as the U.S. Department of Transportation give back and engage communities? We will ask Linda Jacobs Washington, chair of the Local Federal Coordinating Committee of the Combined Federal Campaign for the National Capital Area, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour. Faced with seemingly intractable issues such as an ever-growing federal deficit, economic uncertainty, unemployment, and an aging infrastructure, it appears that the old adage, doing more with less, has taken on a whole new reality. Addressing the challenges arising from this new reality brings with it opportunities to try different approaches and borrow new strategies. Hi, I'm Michael Keegan, managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. In the latest edition of the Business of Government magazine, we bring together leaders, innovators, practitioners, and thinkers who offer models to follow, provide insights that can infuse theory to practice, and pave the way to reshaping the business of government. Hear from Dr. Bobby Braun, chief technologist at NASA, about advancing its space technology program. Air Force Surgeon General Bruce Green on how disruptive innovations are saving lives on the battlefield. Dr. David McClure of GSA on how the federal government's trying to become more open, collaborative, and innovative. Richard Spires leading Homeland Security's technology effort. Cass Holloway ensuring the New York City water system is viable for the next 100 years. And Vice Admiral Jack Dorsett on strengthening the U.S. Navy's information dominance for the 21st century. Our forum is dedicated to exploring ways government leaders can cut costs and improve performance. All of this and so much more in the Fall-Winter 2010 edition of the Business of Government magazine. Order your free copy at businessofgovernment.org and find out how the business of government is not business as usual. Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Linda Jacobs-Washington, Senior Policy Advisor for Community Initiatives at the U.S. Department of Transportation and Chair of the Local Federal Coordinating Committee of the Combined Federal Campaign for the National Capital Area. So, Linda, I'd like to transition to your other role as Senior Policy Advisor on Community Initiatives at the U.S. Department of Transportation. Would you tell us more about your responsibilities at transportation, and how do you support the overall mission of DOT and its community presence?
You know, the mission of the Department of Transportation is basically to serve the U.S. citizens by ensuring a fast, safe, efficient, accessible, and convenient transportation system that meets our vital national interests and enhances the quality of the life of the American people. Now, that's pretty lofty, but it's simple. It's not a lot of times easy to do, but we're dedicated to doing it. Now, Mike, I know that you've taken a bus or a subway to work or to play. I know that you've gone to the market on a road or a highway. You've flown in a plane and perhaps ridden on a train. You are able to do that because the folks at DOT are doing their jobs. We're not only talking about moving, though, people. We're talking about moving things, all those ships, trains, cars, and trucks bringing us the essential products. And think about it this time of the year where everybody's going out Christmas shopping. You got to get on those roads. You got to bring those packages home. Those goods are being shipped from all over the world. In addition, our food supply, you're going to buy food for your holiday dinner. So all the products that improve your quality of life, even the Blackberries and cell phones that we use, all of those have to be shipped somehow. And for me, the latest fashions have to be shipped somehow. You name it, though, transportation is moving it. But our number one goal is and must be safety. DOT keeps us safely in motion, and they're serving every citizen's need to travel safely for work and play. And while also serving that lifeline, it also powers our economy. We also take very seriously our role in serving our community. We at DOT are acutely aware that not only do we have a traveling community we serve, but also an internal community of DOT staff, the community in our immediate neighborhood and around the world and the country. We really take to heart the need to improve the quality of life for our fellow Americans. We are fortunate to have DOT leadership who truly believe in giving back to the community and are committed to making a difference by providing support to many community programs. My current role is to support and encourage community outreach activities for the Department of Transportation. You know, I recently heard a gentleman who, by the way, is a former Coastie or with the Coast Guard. And as you know, the Coast Guard used to be in the Department of Transportation. But this gentleman grew up in Washington, D.C., and he now manages the historic D.C. Fire Foundation. And he said, you know, Linda, when one takes from a community, one must give back to the community. And we believe that at DOT. I am able to provide support on a much larger scale and scope in my role as the chair of the local federal coordinating committee of the Combined Federal Campaign for the National Capital Area. So it all really melds very well together.
Well, what about you? I'd like to know more about you. This is the second time we've had you on the show. It's a pleasure having you back. Your passion is so acute. But what about your career? How did you begin and what brought you to your current leadership position?
How much time do we have? Well, let me say that I have been very, very blessed in both my life experiences and professional experiences. I have a master's and a bachelor's degree in education, and I taught school for 1 year. However, you know, my education background gave me the skills to excel in the next step of my career, which was Xerox Corporation. I spent 12 years with Xerox, holding various sales and marketing positions, and while at Xerox, I was honored to earn the President's Club Award and the Park Club Award for achieving and exceeding sales goals. I was always told that because of my presentation skills, I was able to make wonderful sales presentations. So it was the next step in my transition to my federal career. And I came into the federal government at the Library of Congress, the wonderful Library of Congress. And I came in 1994 as the chief of the Photo Duplication Service. And we provide microfilming services for the preservation of all the library's collections. And by the way, I was very fortunate, again blessed, to enter the federal government at the senior level. This afforded me the opportunity to be readily moved to other assignments as needed. So I was asked to become the Director of Integrated Support Services at the Library of Congress, where I managed support operations, all the supporting infrastructure, everything but IT. After 9 years of being at the Library of Congress, I moved to DOT in May of 2003 as the Deputy Assistant Secretary for Administration. During that time, I was honored by the Washington, D.C. chapter of the Women's Transportation Seminar as the 2005 recipient of their Diversity Award in recognition of outstanding leadership in transportation. Now, 2007 was a crazy busy year for me. I was appointed as the Assistant Secretary for Administration, and again, I was managing the supporting infrastructure, everything but IT again, but on a much larger scale in the Library of Congress. Because we have about 58,000 employees at the Department of Transportation, we had about 7,000 at the Library of Congress. Now, during my time as the Assistant Secretary for Administration, I served as the Chief Human Capital Officer, and I like to say the Chief People Officer for the department, because it is about people. But I was also responsible for planning the relocation of the department to our new headquarters building, the first building that was constructed with enhanced post 9/11 security requirements and energy saving design elements. That was a wonderful, rewarding experience for me. In October of 2007, I was selected by the President as a recipient of the Presidential Rank Award, which is given again for leadership, professionalism, and commitment to excellence in public service. And in March 2008, I was honored during Women's History Month with the President's Volunteer Service Award. So during my time at DOT, I've been a member of the local federal coordinating committee for the past 7 years. And as you said, I've been the chair for the past 3 years. So all of this has been a wonderful, natural transition for me to assume the position of senior policy advisor for community initiatives for the department. I mean, it's my passion. I really feel it's my calling. Somewhere I'm supposed to be.
Well, that's wonderful. And it's a great segue to understand some of the key community initiatives you are leading or involved in at DOT. In what way does the department work with communities to be successful in meeting its mission and enhancing livable conditions for communities?
Well, you know, DOT was very actively involved in the Feds Feed Family program in giving and collecting food, non-perishable items for the Capital Area Food Bank. But DOT has our own food program. It's called FEEDS, Federal Employees Ensuring Daily Survival, where DOT volunteers are scheduled on a monthly basis to go to Bread for the City to help serve lunch. DOT mentors also participate in a program that I participated in. It's called Everybody Wins. And we read to our local community elementary school, the Bowen Elementary School, on Tuesday and Thursdays of each week. In fact, Secretary LaHood was recently spotted there reading to and with the students. Once a month, volunteers at DOT meet and mingle and play bingo at the Greenleaf Senior Citizen Center. And we host parties for seniors on special holidays. We just had our Christmas party. There's a community service coalition at DOT, which annually solicits school supplies for Bowen Elementary School. And also, we donate warm clothing in the months of January and February for the homeless. We collect turkeys to donate to families at Bowen Elementary School, which, again, is our community school. And, you know, DOT volunteers are teaching classes at Veterans Center on Microsoft Office to vets. And over the Thanksgiving holiday, they donated 100 hats and mittens to the vets. The vets, I have to tell you, were delighted. On a monthly basis, on Wednesday nights, dinner is also served to the homeless at Central Union Mission. I personally have had the pleasure of participating in ongoing speaking opportunities. The most recent, I was asked to speak at the Air Traffic Control Association Conference in National Harbor, Maryland, and I was interviewed by high school students about community service and the combined federal campaign. So whenever I have a chance to talk about community service and combined federal campaign, I do it. So it's a pleasure and an honor for me to represent the department in that regard. Now, I could go on and on, but this gives you a few examples of what we do within the community. And it's not just DOT. all agencies are involved in some way in giving back and supporting their communities. I really believe it's our moral obligation for those of us who have to help those of us who don't have or cannot have for whatever reason.
Linda, given your wealth of experience from your leadership role with the CFC for the National Capital Area to your role with DOT, what are the characteristics of an effective leader?
Well, it's not an overnight thing, and it's not something that you do in a day. Being an effective leader is an ongoing pursuit for me. A few years ago, I was introduced to a program called Facilitative Leadership. As a leader, I have learned that I must not only manage resources, which is very important, but I must facilitate and involve others to ensure continuous improvement. Now, continuous improvement is very important to me. It's in my blood also, because this is what I learned at Xerox. We had a word called Kaizen. We were always taught to strive for continuous improvement. And I have to tell you, I am rarely satisfied with the way things are. I always want to do things differently and better. The job of a leader, I believe, is basically to create a safe environment for people to participate. And we should really look for opportunities to get input from people and for them to work together in teams. Now, when I, as a leader, get others involved, you know what it does? It allows me to be strategic and focus on the big picture, which is really where my efforts should be. In addition to being strategic, I must be collaborative, receptive, and flexible. Some of this is a little bit of common sense, but sometimes we forget about that. And to use a football analogy, which I do a lot with the CFC, a leader is a coach, because we're called to encourage and motivate others. And you know, leading is really about using the wisdom you have to be able to discern the correct approach to working with people. Maya Angelou said, "I've learned that people will forget what you said, people will forget what you did, but people will never forget how you made them feel." We as leaders should remember that. My position with the CFC has reinforced my belief that you have to lead by inspiration. But I have to tell you, I have been inspired and motivated by the many feds and people who work for charities. While a lot of these people are not managers, they are special people, and they are truly leaders.
Linda, what have you learned in your various leadership roles about the importance of collaboration to the success of any government-wide initiative, and how do you leverage partnerships in your efforts?
You know, in this day and age, there are social, economic, and technological forces that can be very challenging to the way we lead and manage organizations and, quite frankly, get things accomplished. There's a constant need to give and receive more information and receive it faster. So it makes sense for us to collaborate and partner with others, both in government and the private sector, to help us maximize resources, reduce redundancy, and become more responsive. Information sharing is the key. The government's OpenGov initiative helps to provide information to the public, and we're working in partnership with the private sector to provide more information online. The government also has formed coalitions among agencies through the numerous councils, such as the Chief Human Capital Council, the Chief Acquisition Council, and the CIO Council, and others. And that's designed to share information and resources and to solve common problems. So we're not all, you know, using our resources for the same thing, but we're sharing those resources. And within agencies, we have a changing workforce and four generations in the workforce today. We're working side by side, each of us with different experiences, expertise, and knowledge, all of us thinking that we know it all. Because of increasing complexity and increasing needs and expectations, we all need to work together, every group, to provide needed services to the American citizens, because that's why we're here. And by the way, you and I are American citizens, and we want that to happen. The Combined Federal Campaign is a classic example of successful collaboration and partnerships, where we use the talents and resources of federal employees and charities to work together to help people in need. That's the ultimate partnership.
Well, you've alluded in our conversation today, if not directly stated, that most achievements are not solo acts. And how do you engage and empower your employees, your staff, or volunteers?
Well, you know, my approach uses the seven facilitative leadership principles. First, I create and communicate a vision of success that inspires and gives focus to the team. And it gives joint focus. It gives shared focus. Because employees need to buy into and own the vision. Because if they do, they will take responsibility for ensuring success. Secondly,